Do you think life is simpler after you retire? For some, it's actually more complicated when facing issues about health, estate plans, probate, long-term care, and more. That's why attorney CPA Joe Cordell hosts Elder Talk with Joe Cordell, providing smart solutions for seniors and an open forum for older adults with important questions about their future. Here's attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
Welcome to another episode of Elder Talk. This week, we're going to continue talking, as we have in recent weeks, about housing issues. How do you pay for the costs of your care as you age? And we have an expert with us today that will be able to shed a lot of light on this subject and give us kind of some inside information on how this works, especially in the St. Louis area. You want to introduce our guest, Susan?
I would love to. Our guest today is Jeannie Krause-Taylor. Now, Jeannie is the president of Pathways for Aging and brings more than 20 years experience as a professional social worker, including serving as a social work manager for Barnes Jewish Hospital and a case manager supervisor with the St. Louis Regional Center for the Developmentally Disabled. She has also served as an adjunct faculty member at Washington University and is very active in the community as a past president of the board of directors for, listen to this, Housing Options Provided for the Elderly. It's an organization that is referred to as HOPE. Thank you for being with us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, now, let's start, Jeannie. And you go by, it's Jeannie, not Jenny.
Right, Jeannie.
Jeannie. Okay, Jeannie, let's start by telling us then, what is a senior care manager?
A senior care manager is generally someone who's a professional who has a background in health or medical services. And the majority of the senior care managers are probably social workers, gerontologists, or a nurse. And they all come from some type of helping background. We also have a few people that are physical therapists or counselors or psychologists. As far as what did they do?
Yeah. Why do people come to you for help?
Generally, they come because they don't know what direction to go to. And the majority of the people that contact us are not the seniors themselves, but are the family members.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
So, you know, the seniors say they're fine, but their family is beginning to have some concerns.
So what is the precipitating event, if there is a precipitating event?
Well, a lot of them are things like memory issues, like maybe the daughter notices mom's not taking her medications like she used to. Concerns about hygiene, mom or dad aren't bathing regularly, they're wearing the same clothing day after day, they're losing weight, they're
and I imagine
concerned
some,
about nutrition.
In some cases, there are probably some sort of trauma, maybe occasionally, like a fall or something.
Oh, yes. And yes, because there's a lot of concern about falls. And if this person has fallen, maybe been on the floor for a day or more before the family found out, or sometimes end up in the hospital because of that. And so the children begin to question whether their parent can live independently. Or sometimes it's an elderly couple and they really can't take care of each other either.
So I noticed that the phrase senior care manager is what you use. Is that the description for this profession of professionals from the varied backgrounds you described? They can, you know, whether it's nursing or social work or whatever, who make it their job to help solve these housing dilemmas or crises that people have as they age?
Well, a senior care manager, or it's also, we're known as geriatric care manager, although seniors don't generally want to be called geriatric.
I can see
sounds
that.
A little
right.
I know.
But I've heard that phrase.
And then the professional organization that I'm a member of a few years ago changed it to aging life care specialist. So that's also a new title that we go by.
I predict that one won't last too long.
Well, that's why I generally say care manager, because most people do not even understand what the other term means.
It is difficult to really know what that encompasses.
Right? Yeah, and sometimes when you hear the phrase, for example, geriatric care manager, it's not just housing. It's also helping them make decisions that might relate in indirect ways or direct to their health. I've heard of these advisors even sometimes going with them to appointments, such as doctor's appointments, et cetera.
Oh, yes. I mean, the majority of the clients that I see, they want to stay in their own home. So what we try to do is come up with ways to make that happen. What resources are out there that we can bring in to help support this person to stay in their own home? But also, like, I do take people to doctor's appointments frequently. I mean, a lot of what we do is monitoring how the senior is doing in their home and, you know, either setting up a resource to take them to the doctor or take them ourselves. I mean, a lot of times the family wants someone who's more knowledgeable of the healthcare and the medical system in order to go rather than just getting a ride for the person. So I know a lot of families will say, I asked mom what the doctor said, and she'll just say, oh, he said I'm fine. Mm-hmm. Did you ask him about this health problem, or did you tell him about that? No, I didn't want to bother him. He was kind of busy. And the children end up not really understanding or knowing what's going on medically with their family.
Yeah, and that is a very real problem. Mm-hmm. And I suspect some of our listeners out there might be shaking their heads in agreement that part of it is a challenge of memory. Part of it is just, you know, aging and being able to focus. But you often hear people who go to their doctors and they don't tell the doctor things that later they themselves wish they had said. Mm-hmm. Or maybe they would never have said, the family's just complaining about that.
Right.
But either way, the information is not conveyed to the doctor. The doctor has this, I hate to say flawed information source, but this insufficient information mm-hmm. source that they're relying on, the person sitting in front of them. And it's just not a good arrangement to allow the doctors to have the most information and for the caregivers to have the most information.
Well, you're exactly right. And actually, I work with one lady now that I've known her for a few years. And every time she goes to see a new doctor, she'll say, Jeannie, I need you to go with me and bring your notebook. That's what she told me the other day. Bring your notebook so you can write these things down, because I don't understand what he's talking about.
That is so typical.
Mm-hmm. But do they ask questions of the doctor? Not necessarily. Or if they do, it might be the answer might be in a jargon and they don't understand it.
And part of that is generational. Mm-hmm. This deference to doctors. You know, when you're in the presence of a doctor, for the most part, you sit and listen. You know they're busy and you're thankful that they're giving you these 5 minutes.
Right.
I don't think there's that deference among 30-year-olds.
No.
In the presence of a doctor.
They're more pay attention to me.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't hang out with those folks so much.
Yeah, I'm the most important patient in the world. It's an honor. So it is a different attitude. I do think that it's a bit of it's generational, but much of it is the reason that the patient's there to begin with, and to count on them to be this perfect communicator and to recall everything that's said is just not a realistic expectation.
Well, and I wonder how many seniors also don't want to make it a bigger deal than what they think it might be. In other words, if I tell them this, then they might really want me to move. They tend to minimize.
Yes,
exactly.
Now that's a very good motive.
They'll minimize what's going on because they don't want someone to step in and say, you shouldn't be staying by yourself anymore, or you can't handle this.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point.
I'll frequently have people say to me, don't tell my kids this or that.
Yeah, yeah.
How does that work with you being in the doctor's office regarding HIPAA rules and things like that? Do they have to sign something that says it's okay for you to be there or no?
As long as I just walk in with them.
Yeah, as long as there's a presence.
So that's, they're just
right.
there.
If I'm trying to get information after the fact or before, maybe over the phone, I will frequently need a signed release by the client, but I've just walked into the doctor's offices and I can hear everything and communicate my concerns as well.
So let's talk about how you're paid and how people will find somebody in your profession. We want people to know about you, but even more important, we want people to understand that this profession exists.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a little confusing because there have been name changes. I noticed when I was looking at a website for a while back with respect to a relative in another city that the website had a different name from what it had previously been known as. And maybe it currently was I didn't think it was geriatric care manager, but it may have been. So it seemed like the profession hadn't figured out what it was going to be. So tell people then how people, not just how you charge, but more importantly, what can people expect to pay? What are the different ways in which it's paid, et cetera, when they go to somebody like you and your profession to help them with a loved one or themselves?
Generally, it's private pay. Frequently, people ask me if Medicare covers this, but it does not. So people have to pay out of pocket. Frequently, either the senior will pay or family members will step in and pay for it, or sometimes they even chip in and everybody in the family will chip in some money to pay for it. For an assessment, we go out to the client's home and meet with them in their home. And we're probably there an hour to 2 hours generally. I provide a written report afterwards and then have a consult with the family, you know, usually either telephone or face-to-face, depending on where they are.
And what is the purpose of the assessment?
To determine what actually is going on in the client's home. We want to see what their setup is, how the home is arranged, how they function in that home, what's working, what's not working, and picture is worth a thousand words.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
and
we actually go to the home.
I would think you're more than an hour at the home on those things typically.
Usually.
Yeah.
Usually an hour and a half to 2 hours. But depends on how much of a talker they are. But
maybe three.
Sometimes. But we see the whole home and how it's laid out. I interview the client, and I always include some cognitive assessments where I'm looking at their memory and their mood as to whether, you know, and I always try to meet with my client by themselves for at least a portion of the interview.
Because
I may have the family member may join us, but then I always excuse them so I can meet privately with the older adult.
That makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Because they may have totally different concerns than what their children have.
And they're going to be inhibited.
Pardon?
They might be inhibited about mm-hmm. being as candid.
Yes, for sure.
Well, and I'm thinking of myself. I'm sure I would jump in. I'm pretty sure I'd be telling them what they need to know.
Complete a few of those sentences.
Yeah, I probably would.
So I think people charge differently for that, but what I found worked the best was to just come up with a flat rate. And I pay, you know, charge people a flat rate so they know exactly what they're going to pay. And then for ongoing care management, we charge hourly. So it depends on how much they want us involved. Some people just want an assessment and for you to point them in the right direction. And other people want an assessment and actually need somebody to help follow through on the direction because they may not be available. They may live out of state or they may just be overwhelmed with their own caregiving as far as children, job, professional responsibilities. It really, they may have multiple things they're trying to juggle and they just aren't available.
So what is a typical hourly rate for someone in your position?
These days it's probably $90 to $130 an hour in the St. Louis area. Other parts of the country, it varies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I would say probably most folks are probably $110 to $120 an hour.
Now, if they contract, though, is it common that if somebody commits to a certain number of hours a month that that price would go down per hour?
It could. I mean, everybody bills differently.
Does differently, yeah.
Yeah, so some people may have like a retainer amount and charge. I know like I charge extra for nights and weekends.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
sometimes I'm called to help with somebody at an emergency room or even just things happen. I had one lady who was like, you've got to come to the nursing home now, and it's Saturday night, you know? Well, yeah. I went,
yeah.
But, you know, I had to cancel my plans,
right.
And so I did charge extra.
So that's understandable.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when you think about it, call it $100 an hour is what somebody might spend or a little more. This isn't somebody who you're paying on an hourly basis to sit at home with your loved one. I mean, mm-hmm. this is an expert that's coming in to advise at critical points, maybe going to the doctor, as you said, going to a doctor's office,
mm-hmm.
Advising regarding those pivotal decisions about, gee, should we move? Shouldn't we? Is this home safe? So given that those are very specific problems that are solved, that it seems reasonable for people, whether they're middle class or less even, to be able to afford somebody for this limited purpose.
Yes. I mean, I tell people I'm not going to be the person that comes to the house and makes lunch for your mom and makes sure she has a shower today. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be there for 4 to 8 hours. I'm generally there maybe 1 to 3 hours, depending upon what we're doing. I may just be going in to check on how things are going. I might only be there an hour. But if I'm taking them to doctor's appointments, things like that, you know, it could be a couple of hours.
Now, when you do an assessment and you see some things that maybe could change, we've talked earlier where most people want to stay in their own homes. What types of recommendations might you make to allow them to stay in their homes a little bit longer?
Well, every situation is different, and it depends on their needs. Some people may have physical problems. They may have memory problems. But I'm frequently recommending to bring in a private duty aide, somebody that will help them, that could be there for 4 hours or 8 hours, that could actually help them with meals and a little house cleaning or run to the grocery store, things like that. And that type of person is going to be much less expensive than me doing that mm-hmm. for them. I mean, I've picked up groceries for somebody occasionally, but that's not my main job. So I would say caregivers, transportation is a big need. Mm-hmm. Frequently, people aren't driving anymore, or they shouldn't be driving anymore. And
yes,
we're trying
to,
which is another whole subject. But we can help them to find resources for transportation to different appointments, events, things like that. So looking at their safety, you know, in the home is one of the big things I look at. You know, what do we need to do to enable them to remain in their home as safely as possible? Also, those emergency, personal emergency response systems, the mm-hmm. Lifeline is mm-hmm. one
they
brand.
They wear around their neck. Or
right. The eye fell and I can't get up.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
Those are important, you're saying.
Yes. Oh, yeah. But then it's also getting them to wear them. They may have it in the house, but they don't always want to wear them. So things like that. Oversight for medications. We may need a family member or even a nurse that comes in weekly. I have some people that we do that, where somebody comes in and helps fill out the medication box either once a week or every 2 weeks, so we can track, is that person actually taking their medications, things like that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there's family available to do that, but not always.
Right. Yeah. And so many people have families living in children living in other cities. Mm-hmm. So we're talking to Jeannie Krause Taylor. She's a Master's of Social Work, LCSW, various other credentials. She is what is called a senior care manager, and her career, her profession is dedicated to providing expert advice, counsel on issues related to seniors' living arrangements, their health arrangements. Virtually all the challenges that seniors might face, you come in and give advice and recommendations. So let's just take a break. We'll come back in a few moments. We're going to continue talking about some of the issues to consider if, in fact, you have to move or a loved one has to move from where they are now. What are some of the options that exist for them in the St. Louis area? Back in a moment.
You're listening to Elder Talk with Joe Cordell, providing smart solutions for seniors, presented by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. And now, attorney CPA, Joe Cordell.
All right, we're back. With us today is Jeannie Krause Taylor. She's a senior care manager, and we're talking about some of the advice she gives to her clients whenever they're living alone, perhaps they're considering the possibility of moving to a new location. I guess money is going to be one of the big determining issues, isn't it, in these decisions?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I tell people it always comes down to money. I mean, in the senior housing community, there's all different levels of housing. There's all different kind of prices. And I try to individualize my recommendations to that particular client based on their need, but also what can they afford. I'm not going to refer them to the highest, most expensive place in town when they're living on a very small budget. So everybody's situation is different.
Mm-hmm. And I guess then you have to gain some familiarity with their financial circumstances.
Yes, I end up asking them about their finances. I mean, I usually do that towards the end because you have to develop a rapport with people. You know, that's a kind of a taboo subject.
That's the most sensitive
subject.
Yes, it is. Now, when you talk about toward the end, you're referring to the fact that we talked a while ago about often the way that you're introduced into the lives of your clients is you're called in for an assessment. Is that right?
Right, correct.
And that assessment is this 2 hours or so that you might spend with them at their home. And among the things you'll talk about on that occasion might be their financial circumstances?
Yes. I always include finances in the assessment because I have to get some idea of what kind of money we're working with. If you have lots of money, it's a lot easier to stay in your own home than it is if you have a very meager budget if you're going to try and hire people. I also look at entitlement programs. Or is there anything that they might be eligible for, whether it's Medicaid or the VA or what other resources that might be available to them? Sometimes it's even family.
Do you help them apply for those services?
We can, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So then when you're talking to them about these possibilities, and let's assume that they have some money, tell us how the ways in which that can be helpful staying in the home. Now, you mentioned before we went into the break, you'd mentioned that you can hire, for example, a home care aide.
Correct.
Who can work. What other changes are available if people are willing to commit some resources to living in their home?
Well, you can also, instead of just using maybe call a ride or public transportation, you can afford to hire either a home care aide or even a professional driver. I have one client who uses a driving service company who takes her to all of her medical appointments. So it's really what level of transportation and comfort that you want.
And sometimes some changes, I guess, maybe in the house itself, I'm thinking.
Yes, as far as maybe some home modifications, because that's one of the things I always look at. You know, do they have grab bars? Are they in the bathroom? Are the doorways accessible for a wheelchair, especially in a lot of the older homes? The doorways may be narrow, a lot of steps.
Is the master bedroom upstairs?
Mm-hmm.
It's probably an important question.
For sure. And we look at, you know, maybe they can afford to get one of those stair lifts that takes you up and down the steps.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that may depends on their physical condition, but there's lots of different services and more coming on all the time.
So that's good news to the people who are listening who have some dollars to commit. And it doesn't mean that they're wealthy. It means that they're willing to take some of their dollars and commit to staying in the home. And you're suggesting that if the circumstances are right, there are some things you can do to live there a lot longer than you otherwise could.
Oh, yes. And like I have now, there's a lot more like phones that have, you know, amplifiers on them. There's mm-hmm. just so many different
tools.
Tools, exactly.
Well, and technology probably plays a big part in that as well. I know that there are some technological advances that will allow people to monitor their medications from afar and monitor some of their health information from afar. And
even loved
like
ones can monitor mm-hmm. from afar. Like mm-hmm. those. I don't know about the video thing, but
yeah,
I know this.
I had a family that used the video where they would monitor like what was going on in the home.
Well, you know, I guess you could make, if I were a lawyer hired to make an argument for that, I'm sure I could make a good one. but somehow, I think if it could just invade privacy. Now, I'm sure that they're not in very private places, but the purpose of the cameras is to alert,
mm-hmm.
you know, like your children to a problem. And so it would have to include falls that might occur in a bathroom or mm-hmm. something. So I don't know how all of that's handled, but I can see where the future is probably going to be more of that than less.
Oh, I think so. I mean, it's
yes.
just my opinion. As we like to age in home and as the population ages itself and technology becomes more and more accessible and more accepted, mm-hmm. then I can definitely see that happening.
So a good illustration of what we're talking about is my aunt, to whom I was very close. She passed away not long recently, in fact, and she was living in her home in Louisville. She was living by herself, had an upstairs bedroom. But she very much wanted to stay in her home. She didn't have any children, so there was my brother and me that were kind of acted as her children pretty much. So she had this button around her neck, this emergency call button that she was supposed to be wearing. And for reasons that none of us will figure out, she was coming down the steps at we don't know what time. It could have been anywhere between 2 in the morning and 9 o'clock the next evening. Mm. I mean, that wide
that
a span.
Long.
And she had, we had told her that she should have care people stay overnight with her. And she could afford that, but she didn't want to.
But she didn't want to.
She didn't want to. And yet, this sounds familiar to you, right?
She's nodding her head. Yeah.
We don't need those people in my business.
Right. So she didn't have them there. And for reasons I'll never understand, she seemed to have been hurrying down the steps as if she had, I don't know what it was, but she fell. And she fell down the steps, hit her head at the bottom of the steps, was there many hours, I'm sure, before she was found. A neighbor went and checked on her, and that was how she was discovered. She had a number of broken bones. She never really gained consciousness. She died a week later in the hospital. But it's I look at that situation, and I think how, you know, despite our urging her to have people staying there, she didn't really want to do that. And I don't think she ever pressed that button, because I think when her head hit the floor at the bottom of the steps, I think she was unconscious. So I can see now in ways that I couldn't before, at least more graphically, mm-hmm. what some of the downsides are of insisting on living at home.
Yes, it can be risky, but I do think a lot of people feel that that's the way they want to go. And they do not, they are such a stigma with nursing homes that a lot of seniors, you know, have pledged to never go to one or to never put their loved one in one. But they don't always realize there's so many different levels of care out there now that it's not just nursing homes. There's assisted livings and independent living that still provide some support.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot out there, but there's a huge resistance to it. And I think that maybe part of it is our culture of our society. We all want to be independent.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
we value independence so much that people are so reluctant to ask for help, and they want us to do it on their own.
I think part of that is cultural.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. I think that in Japan, I would bet that you don't see quite this insistence on freedom and independence. Perhaps as devil's advocate, I would say my aunt, she lived a long life, a happy life. She died in the place she wanted to die in, I'm sure, maybe a little sooner than she intended. But she did live where she wanted to live, and she had her independence.
Yes, and I've had many clients over the years tell me they would rather die in their own home than go to a nursing home. And that's if they have the ability to understand the consequences of their decision, that is their right.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. And so I can see where as people age, especially as an elder lawyer, I can see all the complexity about all these decisions. And some of it, much of it is beyond legal questions. It's really very practical questions. Like when I was trying to help my aunt look for places in Louisville, and it was a challenge to have familiarity with a place that I didn't know. Now, in St. Louis, I know a lot about the options that exist. So when I'm talking to clients, while I don't attempt to do what you all do as a profession, still I have some familiarity with the options that are out there. But when you're talking about another city, as many of the people listening to this show, if their children and their parents may live in other cities, you know, they don't have any idea what those options are. And in the absence of somebody such as this profession that you're in, a senior care manager, then how would they know to check certain places versus others?
Well, for one thing, our professional organization is national, so they could certainly find someone who does the same type of work that I do in another community.
And again, what is that website? How will that appear?
Well, it's the Aging Life Care Association. But the website, I have to look it up.
Okay, but Aging Life Care Association. All right. So, no, our listeners can look that up.
Mm-hmm. So they can find someone that does what I do. And I have done consults with family members here in St. Louis with that very same problem. And I have referred them to that website to find someone that can actually go lay eyes on their loved one in another part of the country. There's also other organizations such as the Area Agency on Aging. Those are generally across the country.
Mm-hmm.
But where you can find some resources. Now, you probably won't find someone that can actually go and do individualized assistance with your loved one.
Through that agency.
Right. But they could give you some ideas of some resources in that community.
Yeah, I think that, what people want to know is, you know, given our budget, what are the options that exist? What are the pros and cons of different facilities? You know, what is the backstory on a lot of these facilities? And one of the things that's a disincentive to me is when I've met people who've come to my office, they've wanted to meet with me, who are essentially with an organization that is paid by a certain number of nursing homes or housing providers, that they're in a membership, a cluster that represents the portfolio of this person. Mm-hmm. So they're not truly in a position to recommend what they think is best. Instead, it is the clients or the companies that have signed up with them. So they're collecting fees based on referral to one of those companies that's in that on that list. And if a company's not willing to pay them their referral fees, they don't get on the list. So I'm pretty dismissive about those people or those professionals, I should say, because I feel like they're not going to provide clients the full range of possibilities because they're influenced mm-hmm. by their compensation. You guys, by contrast, I guess, are not. You're kind of smiling. Is this a common problem in getting referrals?
I've had a few referrals from those type of organizations who said they really couldn't help the person with something that was not in their portfolio, and the person maybe was low income. So they've asked me to give the family some suggestions. Yes, we are hired by the client. I get no compensation from any kind of senior housing or any type of organization out there for referrals. So I refer to who I think is the best fit mm-hmm. for my client, because I work for you.
So let's take the last bit of time we have here, and let's talk about some of the options in the St. Louis area. And what are some of the factors that you would consider in making a referral? And I guess one of the most common ones would be people want to stay in the same area where they've grown up. Is that a big factor? Or where they've lived most recently, I should say?
Yes. People feel most familiar, you know, most comfortable with their community. Even when I was working in the hospital and discharging people to nursing homes, they wanted to go to the nursing home close to where they lived, even though the family lives across town. So
family wants them closer to them.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. So I would consult with the family and say, you know, you really need to make it close to you, what's convenient for you, whether it's convenient to your home or your work, so that you can get there as often as possible to visit. You don't want somebody all the way across town if you can avoid it.
Okay, so we know community's huge where people live. And I guess people lack a lot of amenities and, you know, a nice place. So and those more lavish, better accommodations may be more in one part of the city than the other. Is that true?
Oh, yes. I mean, there's a lot more options if you go out to West County than there are if you were in North City or South City. There's just not that many places being built even closer in to 270. There's more. There's a new one that's just coming on. But it seems like the majority of them have been out pretty far west.
West, yeah, including St. Charles.
Yes, yes, lots more coming up in St. Charles as
so
well.
So do you find that you're referring a lot of people to St. Charles and West County because of their better, or so I should say newer, more with more amenities?
Upscale.
More upscale, that's a good word.
Yes, I do. A lot of them are, what do you call it, continuum of care.
So
that enables people to go move around within that campus from maybe independent living to assisted living to nursing home care. Maybe somebody's temporarily in the nursing home for rehab, but then they go back to their assisted living or independent living home. And also it's good for couples, because if one may have different kinds of problems and may not be able to stay in independent living but may need to move into nursing mm-hmm. home for a while.
Right.
And then they can at least visit each other without having to drive and uh-huh. all of those other issues.
Right. That's really good for couples.
And we've had clients who that's true of, even as I speak, just in the past month or so. The couple had moved into a continuing care community, and it had that ability to progress. And they had this very nice apartment directly across from St. Luke's Hospital, whatever that facility is.
Brooking Park.
Brooking Park. Very nice, incidentally. So they had an apartment there, and the wife had some health problems, and the husband took care of her as long as he could. But then she progressed to eventually she went to assisted living, and then finally, I think, to skilled care. That plan, played out so that they continued to be close to each other and living in the same community, even though they had to separate at one point.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I've seen that happen with several couples. And you're right, then one of them can go visit the other one or spend the day with that person, but then go back in the evening to their residence. It makes it a lot more convenient. And I think part of it is that those places tend to need a lot of ground. And there's not that much room in the inner corridor of St. Louis for them to expand like that. So they tend to be farther out.
You're right.
But not all of them, but the newer ones.
But they are, it is a wonderful option. And I assume that they're building more in St. Charles County, too?
Yes, they are. And, a lot of the children have tended to move out to St. Charles County. And so then they'll want their parents, who may still be in the city or pretty far into the county, they may want them closer to them.
Yeah.
And they don't want to have to fight the traffic to go visit. So they'll try and move them out to St. Charles, perhaps.
So you often recommend, you're very favorably inclined to continuing care retirement communities.
Yes, I like those a lot. But it just sort of depends on each person, their situation, and then again their budget, and what they really want and can afford.
Well, and it seems to me that the senior adult would need to be on board with this idea, because I may think that this is a great idea. I've run into a family member where I just keep saying, why don't you do this? And she is just not having it. She does not want to go, and she's just digging in her heels, and I keep saying, well, but you'd have people around you, and you'd have this. Well, I want to be in my own house. And so I would think that they need to be on board with things, or it's just going to be a really big challenge.
Right. So you don't think that their children should get together and just decide these matters?
Right. Well, and I'm not sure how much you can do with that. At least that's what we're coming in contact with.
Well, usually the children do not have the final say. It's the senior. And I've had experience with people who were pretty much bulldozed into senior housing. And despite it being a lovely place,
they didn't like it.
They did not like it. It's mostly they just don't like the idea that they have to be in senior housing, or that somebody else made this decision for them. It's not their home. It's not the same as living in their own home.
So now how do you protect, though, your credibility, your independence with them? If you have been initially contacted, I'm talking about with respect to your client, which is probably the senior person themselves and not the children, I'm willing to bet it's often the children that contact you.
Oh, 99 times out of 100.
Isn't that interesting? Because here you are an expert on this. You'd think that the seniors, assuming they're clear mentally, that they would be the ones who you'd think would have the incentive to call this professional to come in and help them decide about, gee, what are my housing options? What should I do? But it's interesting, as you said, 99% of the time it's the children. So is it sometimes, are you not conflicted sometimes between your client being, and the client, and let me be clear here, your client is, though, the parent, correct?
Correct. So that is my client. So, yes, it is like walking a tightrope sometimes between the parent and the adult children.
And the children, I can see where they're going to want a full report on everything that's said, and I'm sure that the parent, or I'm willing to bet, that often the parent is wanting to believe that they have a confidential relationship with you. And
well,
do
yes.
they?
Yes, they do. And they will sometimes say to me, don't tell my children this or that happened. So I pretty much follow their request. Mm-hmm. But unless it becomes a true safety issue.
Yeah, health or safety, I can see where. And that they have
and
to understand.
Like I have
that.
One client who never wants her daughter to know anything. But when she ends up in the emergency room, I let the daughter know.
Right.
You know, I
And should. I can see that. So what you do is you you come in, you consult on an hourly basis after the initial assessment, which might be a flat fee arrangement, and then you're on an as-needed basis. To me, it seems like, and I'm not just trying to promote your or your profession's services, but it just seems to me it makes so much sense. I'm surprised that this isn't used more often. If I was looking for somebody such as yourself in Louisville and never really found that, quite frankly. I found a nurse who did. The closest thing I could find was kind of this a role that she was an advisor, but she was more a nurse and she was more a health advisor. She didn't have a lot of information about the housing options and the details of what those even costs are going to be and the details of what's better for one versus another. That's insider information, and it's only somebody who works regularly with a variety of those homes that's going to be able to describe the lay of the land for you. And she had some good qualities, and she was helpful from a health standpoint. She went to some doctor's appointments too, as you described. But she really couldn't address what for us I think was the most urgent piece.
Well, I guess I would just add that, you know, it's hard for one person to know everything about everything that might be needed.
That's right, yeah.
But I would also say that when you're choosing a care manager, you might want to think about if you're looking at if you have choices in that community, what their professional background is. Because as I said earlier, some person may be a gerontologist or a nurse or a social worker. And so they're all going to come from a little different perspective.
Yeah, with a stronger emphasis in a certain area.
Right. And so if you have a parent whose primary issues are healthcare and medical issues, you may want someone with a more medical background. If you're looking more at social issues and housing issues or even mental health issues, you may need someone that has more of a social work background or gerontology background, depending upon what's going on and what the needs are.
Yeah, and it is such a complicated decision deciding, does someone stay where they are or do they move? And if they move, this vast array of options out there, residential care, assisted living, independent living, continuing care, retirement community, skilled care. I mean, it's just no way that someone who's stepping into this problem could possibly figure it out on their own.
And most of the time, well, maybe not most, but often you're having to make these decisions quickly. Because there's been a fall or something like that, they're being released from the hospital and they have to go somewhere.
Mm-hmm. And there's so many analogies we can make. We're almost out of time. But one that comes to mind is, which is imperfect, is like, for example, if you're going to buy a house and you're looking at housing needs in a normal scenario, you go to a realtor and you try to find an experienced realtor. And a really good realtor can tell you a lot about neighborhoods, can tell you a lot about pros and cons of this builder, contractor, et cetera. And really, there is no analogy to that for what we're talking about. We're going to have you back again. We fill this limited time we have with as much information we can, and there's still more things I'd love to talk about. So our guest today has been Jeannie Krause-Taylor. She's a senior care manager. If people want to contact you, how do they do it?
Well, they can go to our website, pathwaysforaging.com, or call my office, 314-395-7560.
Thank you for being with us. Another episode of Elder Talk.
Well, till
next
you.
Week. Take care.
You've been listening to Elder Talk with Joe Cordell, providing smart solutions for seniors with attorney CPA Joe Cordell. Listen again next Saturday for another edition of Elder Talk with Joe Cordell, sponsored by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. For more information, visit eldercarelaw.com. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely on advertisements.